E1. Number 15B.
As much as you can, and we draw 6 categories to begin with. I can't do that on the projector, so I put it into 2 parts, and we take now the word order, or the word in Christian Science, and we make here along that 6 categories, and then you have these horizontals. So we take here in the first 3 really what we had, the divine standpoint. Divine standpoint from, in the first column, from the subjective. The second we leave out, and then the third objective. Yeah? Then we go on and take the next one as another 3 categories. About of equal size, and put into the first 2 the humanly, and then the last one is what it annihilates. And under the humanly, those 2 categories are the objective standpoint, and the other one is the subjective. Now, you see, as long as we are now speaking about this diagram here, we must never forget that we are only speaking about the Word of God. Huh? And the Word of God means only one thing, namely to declare what God is, the nature of God. Not so much the Christ, not Christianity, not science. So we are just sticking to one category limited to the Word. See, we have always an infinite subject, and what we do, we always limit now, we limit. Every analysis is a limitation. We limit now this infinite subject to a certain aspect. And that certain aspect here is the Word, the statement, the self-declaration of being, of the nature of God. Now, if we start again from the divinely, from the divine standpoint, again, that standpoint where still the I am that I am says, I declare myself what I am. Up to now, that has not been shown. It declares and says, here in the divinely subjective, I am. The capital I am. I am. Indicating really now that the I am is the thinking subject. I don't like to say thinking subject because God doesn't think. But subjective means the, well, that which goes on within the awareness of a subject. That what the subject by itself is aware of. And so we can see actually that the I am, when the I am declares what the I am is, then we can easily see that it can only declare itself. It is subjectively conscious only of itself. So the I am says, I am mind. That's the only thing the I am can say. I am mind. Then I am spirit. So that's in the first column. I am soul. I am principle. I am life. I am truth. I am love. Can you see the first statement here? When it's really the definition of God as given for the answer, what is God? Here we get really that definition which we have on page, you can remind yourself that that is the definition on page 465, where that most important question of the textbook is asked, what is the nature of God? And so the nature of God is declared by God saying, well, I don't know anything about myself except that I am mind, and that I am spirit, and that I am soul, and that I am principle, and that I am life, and I am truth, and I am love. Now, here we are in Christian Science and therefore must find the relationship with error. And so right away you could say that that relationship really is that the I am says, I am mind, and therefore not the opposite of mind. Huh? So in the second column you can see, or perhaps can write, I am not. See? Then you give at once a divinely subjective declaration which takes in, because we are now on the level of Christian Science, which takes in what the nature of God is not. Do you see the reasoning? Whereas on earlier levels we just had a statement that God is his own infinite God, that mind is his own infinite mind, and that's the only thing on that level which the mind could perceive. But here where we have to state now that bridge from the divine to, or from truth to error, we can really say, all right, the I am says I'm not. And now you take in, instead of mind, we can take in now those very, very fundamental aspects of the nature of God. We shouldn't take in here now just what God is not, or just any erroneous concept of being. We really should take in here, because we are in the Word, and not in Christianity or so. We should just take in the wrong nature, the wrong fundamental concept of the nature of God. And we know that mind is really that term which stands for the fact about mortal mind. So it wipes out the concept of that the I am is not mortal mind. In spirit, you can see that the I am says, I am spirit and I am not matter. The I am says, I am soul. I am soul. And therefore not. Say it, sense testimony, huh? I am not sense testimony, or I'm not body, huh? It's really both. I am principle. See, I am declares itself as the nature of being principle, and therefore not person. Yes. I am life, therefore I am not death, mortality. See, I am isness and not isness, mortality. I am truth. Subjectively, the I am says I am truth, and therefore I am not error. Huh? Yes? I am love, which means I am the all in all. Huh? I am the all perfection. I am not, I would like to put here, nothing. Huh? That's the greatest counterfeit of love. Huh? I am not nothingness. I am not the great void. Huh? Today they are speaking so much about the great void. Huh? Like in the Eastern philosophy, you want to arrive at the great void. Yeah. Let me go through it again and ask a few questions. Now, let's first see this second column. And I think we can take these few pertinent words or terms and really see, you see, that they constitute, so to say, the counterfeit of the nature of being. Because the wrong nature, the material nature of being, the wrong concept of being, which the whole world has, is that they all build on mortal mind, on a mind of its own, we could say. A mind of its own, that each one has a mind of its own, that we call mortal mind. They all build on the fact that reality is of the nature of matter, that we have to do with the material universe, and only the material universe is the real universe. We all build on the fact that only that is real in the universe which can be measured materially through the five physical senses. So we have in those first three really the fundamental aspect of a material worldview. They are not just some funny counterfeits of the I am, but they are really that which universally one considers to be the groundwork or the fundamental nature of a material universe. It's always that we perceive the universe through a mind of our own, mortal mind. That what we perceive is a material universe and only the material is true. And that which we cannot measure through the five physical senses is anyway not real. So only that which the five physical senses take in is real. Then the counterfeit of principle is that God is regarded as a person in an anthropomorphic way. Always in the Bible, the counterfeit of principle was seen that God is a person. The counterfeit of life, death, because the whole worldview believes that the world is in a state of constant birth and death, that nothing is eternal about the universe. And further, the great point that is under consideration is, can we see the truth because there is so much error going on, and that error is just as real as truth. And finally, it's always the great question, what was before the world and what is after the world? That the Big Bang theory of evolution starts out from the great void, from the great nothingness, that out of nothing something has come forth. So that one considers finally the nature of the universe as nothing. Just as you have it recently more in that theory, or not only theory, also in the observation of the black holes. They all seem to indicate that the world can, after some other billion years, go back right to nothingness. That the whole evolution is turned back instead of expanding the universe, that there are already indications that at some places the universe contracts and contracts and contracts into a point of complete nothingness, so that the universe can go back into nothingness. That's the great theory of the black holes, which especially your professors here in America at the Princeton University are interested in. So that's that theory that being is nothing, that there is a nothingness, and that our material world and universe is just a spin-off of that void, of that nothingness that is fundamental to being. And the Eastern philosophy too is going into that direction, namely that we are absorbed into the great void, so that we have no more individuality, no more individuality of our own, but that all that matters is nirvana or the great void. Against that we have the declaration really of being in the Christian religion, that being is infinite, is of the nature of love. Yes, so can you see that in the measure as we take that divinely subjective standpoint, we can, again, from the point of view of the synonymous term, look at ourselves in a subjective way and say, what am I? And what am I not? And so in this way already begin to make the bridge from truth to error. We have seen that if we come to the next category, the divinely objective sense, that as the I am thinks about itself as mind, the divinely subjective state as mind, that mind always has naturally an object to look at. It always defines itself objectively what it is. So that we must take in the divinely objective sense of being, namely where the divine mind can define itself as what it is objectively. So that it is divinely objective, and therefore mind would always say something very fundamental about itself, and say, for instance, in mind, I am intelligence. See, intelligence is no more a subjective state, but is an objective image of the subjective mind. It's like looking, see, the dictionary says that idea is the immediate object of understanding. It's the immediate object of understanding. Within that one subjective, all-knowing mind, I've already said it now, within that mind, is the immediate object, namely that mind says, I know myself, I'm all-knowing, I'm intelligence. You could also, we only put in here a few very pertinent objective ideas that characterize mind from the point of view of the word in the clearest way. So we get the sense that mind objectifies itself as intelligence, for instance. That's why Mr. Seti speaks so much about the intelligence of mind, that mind is all-knowing, all-seeing, all-apprehending, and so on. These are all the divinely objective manifestations of that divine mind. You could also call it the objective, you could also call it perhaps as the divine manifestation. But there you have to be careful that you don't feel that the divine manifestation is in the human already. It's how the mind manifests itself as divinely objective ideas. So the mind says, I objectify myself as intelligence, as all-knowing, for instance. Spirit, one of the objectifications of spirit is that spirit says, I am substance. The substance is no more a subjective state. Substance is we regard as a very objective state, and here spirit says, I am substance. Or I am the only, because that's more or less the same thing. I'm the only. So, sense objectifies itself and says, I objectify myself as the idea of identity. Identity cannot no more be a subjective state. Identity is already the immediate object of that soul. Principle says, I am the one, the big one. That's my objectification, that you only have one principle, that I am the one power, the one authority, the one. You can't have manys. And life identifies it or objectifies itself. What would it say here? I am isness, huh? Or individuality. Huh? That's my objectification of life, that I am individuality. Or eternity. We only take one or two, just not to make it too complicated. But you can see they are those ideas which characterize life in an objective way, in the divinely objective way, so that it is comprehensible to us. Or you have truth, and truth says, I am conscious of myself. So it's consciousness. See, actually, truth by itself doesn't need consciousness, it is just truth. But the way it appears divinely is that it is consciousness, that God is conscious of itself. And finally, love, you have a sense that love says, I am perfection. These are perhaps the most important divinely objective manifestation of the divinely subjective being.